Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Welcome to Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. Monday and Wednesday, we talk apologetics, theology, how to explain and defend the Catholic faith. But today, we are going to talk about whatever I want to talk about. And what I want to talk about is the game of chess. So I used to play chess a lot when I was a kid. So I went through a big chess phase, probably between, I was probably 8 or 9 years old. And so it brings me so much joy that my little kiddo Matthew, 7 years old, he really wants to learn chess now. And so we even dusted off the old computer chess board that I used to use to learn how to play the game. So back in my day, we didn't have fancy chess programs or apps you could put on your phone. We didn't have cell phones or anything like that. But my parents did buy me a computerized chess board. So it was a regular chess board. It had the plastic pieces inside, and you put the pieces out on the board. But when you turn the board on, and then it kept track of where the pieces were, and you could play the computer, and it would light up on the board where to move the opponent's pieces. And so I just sat there and I played a lot of chess games against this computer. And it was really cool, though, to be able to play it with a physical board, to be able to do that. Now, I am keeping that board in safe possession right now. I let Matthew see it a little bit. But right now, I'm going to hold off on letting him and Thomas, and especially John Paul, who's not even 2 yet, play with it, because I'm worried that board, it's as old as I am. It's probably not going to survive having juice accidentally spilled on it or, something like that. But I did buy him a physical chess board, and you can get those for $10 on Amazon, and they're great. You just get a nice, easy physical chess board, and then a chess app to play on supervised technology time for him to play against a computer to be able to learn the game. And so it was a ton of fun. So today I just want to talk about the game of chess. Now, to say this right up front, I am not some kind of grandmaster. I'm not someone who has studied chess a long time. And you know what's kind of fun about having kids? Is that when you have kids, you can return to things that you got into as a kid and then abandoned. Like, I got into chess, and then after a year or so, I abandoned it. And so I barely remember anything. I remember some intuitive moves when it comes to play. But otherwise, I'm picking it up now. I'm trying to relearn some more of the intermediate and advanced strategies. And it's cool that I can do that with my son. So there's an argument, by the way. If you're unmarried, especially if you're a young man, Catholic, what should I do with my life? Just get married. I'm not ready to get married. Nobody is. Have kids. We're not ready to have kids. Guess what? Nobody is. But it's a great way to learn about yourself, to grow as a person, and it's just a lot of fun. So let's talk a little bit about the game of chess. And one thing I want to talk about that is interesting with it is how the game has evolved over time and how it continues to evolve. And that's something that really fascinates me. First, a little bit of chess trivia for things you may not be as familiar with. If you're familiar with the game of chess, if you've never played chess, it's one of the most popular games around the world. Although in Asia, they play Go, which is essentially Asian chess, which is even more complex than the game of chess itself. There's a great documentary, I think it's called AlphaGo, about teaching a computer. You can teach a computer to play chess and defeat a world champion. They've done that. That was hard, but not that hard. Go is even more complicated than chess, and they just recently made a computer that was able to do that. So the only game we're going to beat the AI at is Calvin Ball, probably, at this point. But chess is, it's a strategy game. You have pawns, bishops, knights, rooks. Each can move on a 64, 8x8 checkered square board. That's at least the standard variation of play. And they can do that. They move in their unique ways. The knight can move in an L. Is it a knight or a horsey? Did you call it a horsey? You call it a knight. Is it a rook or a castle? The bishop's always called the bishop, I guess. Pawns can move one space. And the goal is to move your pieces so that the opponent's king is put in checkmate. Checkmate comes from the Persian phrase shahmat, which means the king is helpless. Though that is not the only way that chess can end. It doesn't end always with a checkmate. And to understand how checkmate works, when the king is in danger, that's check. And by the way, you don't have to say check. I remember when I used to play when I was like 6 years old with other kids, and you would play, and if you forgot to say check, then if someone did a move, you just went and captured their king and beat them. But like in a tournament, you don't say check. The other guy knows he's in check. That means the king is in danger. You either have to move the king, block the move, or capture the threatening piece that's threatening the king. If you can't do any of those three things, then it is checkmate if the opponent the next turn can capture the king. However, chess can also end in a draw or what is called a stalemate. So if you're down, let's say, for example, there are only two kings left on the board, you have a stalemate now. It's impossible to put the other person into checkmate because if you get the king in danger, the king can always run away. And so I guess, can you checkmate a king? No, you can't. I don't think so because if there are two kings, the other one could always move out of the way into a different direction. You're not allowed to move into check either. So the rules have changed a bit over time. And that's what I want to talk about here. And the way the game is played. The game goes all the way back to India. So there was, I think it's called Charong. There's a game there that was played. And so there are a variety of ways. I have an article here from John McCrary. He is a former U.S. Chess Federation president. Article, this was actually a year ago, called The Evolution of Modern Chess Rules, Enter the Queen and Bishop. Because chess was not always played the way we are familiar with it. I think it was in the year 1090, the first black and white board was put forward, the checkered board. Also, black or white could go first. It's been more of a recent convention that the white pieces in chess, that they go first. Let's see here. Oh, and he has a whole bunch of actually entries in here on things that have changed. Castling is when there are actually two moves. If you're a novice chess player, you're like, hey, what the heck is that? One would be en passant. En passant is when you move forward with a pawn. If you move forward, I forget the exact rules, two spaces or one space. The point is if you move the pawn forward a certain way and another pawn meets it on the left or the right side, you can diagonally go ahead and capture that pawn. Normally, you diagonally capture into the piece, but you can diagonally capture behind it and still take the piece. So that's en passant. Castling is a move where the rook and the king can not change places, but the rook moves over two or three spaces, the king moves over. It's a way to get the king out of trouble and to get the rook out in the center of the board so he can do some serious damage. Other moves that have changed is the 50-move draw, that if you are just stuck with like four pieces on the board, if you can't get checkmate in 50 moves, if you're repeating certain moves, then that ends up in a draw. The one I'll talk about today is the queen and the bishop, how that has changed over time. So what's interesting is that the queen was a medieval addition to the chessboard. It entered the game as early as 997, so at the end of the first millennium. Prior to that, the piece that the queen replaced was the king's minister. Then also the bishop was added. I think that was in England, though in France and Germany it was called the fool or the courier. And the queen and the bishop were very limited as pieces because they could only move diagonally one square at a time. And so it took forever to be able to reach anywhere. So they weren't that powerful. Oh, it says here that bishops entered in the mid-1200s. So they came in after the queen, and they replaced a piece that was represented by an elephant. So it makes sense, actually, in the late Middle Ages, you have a lot of warring factions between feudal lords, the church, so lords, knights, bishops. Bishops could have a significant amount of political authority and even some military clout. Some of them would travel around with armor even to protect themselves. So the game of chess really reflected strategies that were employed in medieval Europe for acquiring land and acquiring power. So it's very fascinating here how that developed. And so it was around, I want to say, was it the 16th century or is it 15th century? 14th, 15th century, you get the queen. It says here, the queen and bishop gained their stronger powers in the late 1400s. So both of them did, actually. They can only move one space. So that was when the queen, you're able to now, the bishop can move diagonally any number of spaces, and the queen can now move any direction, any number of spaces. So the queen is probably the most powerful character on the board. I remember playing when I was a kid. One of the strategies is if, let's say, you want to get checkmate, you want to distract somebody, you sacrifice your queen, and so people just can't resist capturing your queen. And if that distracts them, then the next move you go in for the checkmate if you want to keep them distracted. I'm sure real chess aficionados are probably rolling their eyes. Like, I just remember a strategy when I was like seven, And they've probably been studying Garry Kasparov and reading chess books and, you know this down pat. And so it's interesting, though, when it comes to stereotypes of chess, right? We're the two stereotypes of a chess player. First, the nerd. Excuse me, I'm in the chess club. There's like the nerd and the supervillain, right? When you think of stereotypes of chess players, it's the nerd. And then like Ian McKellen, Magneto in X-Men, he's playing chess with Charles Xavier. That was more of a Sean Connery. But the supervillain who plays chess, he can always mastermind people. But it's not a lot of cool people play chess, right, Mom? I mean, it's a great game, and it's great for your mind, by the way. I think they've done some research showing that chess can help to prevent mental degenerative diseases as you're older. Anything you do to keep your brain healthy and active is always good. So one of the theories that in the late 1400s, so it'd be what, 15th, 16th century, the queen gets way more power. And one theory is that it followed the rise in power of Queen Isabella of the Castile, so the Spanish monarch Queen Isabella, that her rise in power paralleled the rise in power of the queen in chess. He wrote a line here that I thought was interesting. One awkward issue. I'm trying to understand the bishop. Oh, he said, all these ideas seem applicable to the times and sets that existed, except the king. The king needed to maintain his limited movement to allow checkmate. The king can only move one space in any direction. Makes sense. If the king can move anywhere, you're never going to checkmate him. The king would now be less powerful than the new queen. Perhaps the inventor of this variant was a woman who thought that this had worked out quite well. All right, so chess has developed over time, and it continues to develop because there's lots of people who play variants of chess. There's all kinds of lots and lots and lots of variants. So there are different variants that you can play based on, for example, you can keep the same board and the same pieces, but you change the rules a little bit as you go through. So one of those is poisoned pawn. I think Bobby Fischer. It was Bobby Fischer who invented that poison pawn. No, it was somebody else. But poison pawn is one of the pawns that's dedicated as, you know, if the other opponent captures it, then they lose. So it definitely discourages you from wanting to capture pawns. Then other variants of the game, you keep the same pieces, you keep the same board, but you change up the starting positions. So Bobby Fischer, the American chess, you know, wizard, he came up with chess 960. Chess 960 is when you have the pawns are still in the same place on the board, but you randomize the back pieces. So the queen could be on the very end of the board, the king could be on the end, the rooks could be in the center. The rooks could be right next to each other on the right side of the board. Apparently there's 960 different combinations of random, and each side can be random. They're not necessarily going to be they're not going to be the same. And so because of this process of randomization, it encourages you to think creatively, because if you start with a standard board, standard pieces with the standard rules, most people who are really good at chess, they memorize, hundreds of opening moves and gambits that you can deploy against other people. The classic one you learn, I don't even know what that, I'm sure it has a name. You know what? I'm going to four move checkmate name. What is it called? The Scholar's Mate. Ah, yes, the Scholar's Mate. That's the one where you move out a pawn, you move one bishop, then the queen, and then either the bishop or the queen. If none of the other pawns are moved, you can do it with the bishop. Otherwise, you'll need the queen. And then you move it. You move that into position to capture the pawn or to occupy the space that is in front of the bishop to the left of the king. I guess that'd be if he's black, you know, from the black player, from black's perspective. That's called Scholar's Mate. You can get checkmate in four moves. That's a classic one to do against someone who has no idea how to play, and they find checkmate really quickly. One of my favorites is Fool's Mate. Fool's Mate is actually, you can win checkmate in two moves if you are black. And white has to move two pawns on the left side of the board, one space, the other two spaces. He would have to do those two, and then if black does one pawn move and then moves his bishop, bam, it would be checkmate if you did that. So let's see, what are some other variants? Other variants in chess that people play is if you change the board itself. You keep the standard moves and you keep the standard pieces, but you change the nature of the board, and that changes how you play the game. Some of my favorites that I've seen include, playing on a sphere. So if you have the board wrapped around itself so that if you go continually in one direction, you end up back where you started. So that changes the dynamic of how you would play. Another one is infinite chess. So this is where you play on a board that's infinitely large. Now, you're not obviously going to travel infinitely with your piece. I mean, I guess in theory, you could take your rook and just your queen, just get it out there and go forever and ever away from the board. But the idea is that you're not bounded. So you can't be backed into a corner because there are no corners. So all kinds of different ways you can play in this regard. Also, you can change the different number of pieces to be able to play. There's a variant called weak. White has the usual pieces, but black has one king, seven knights, and 16 pawns, developed at Columbia University in the 1960s. And then there's a lot where you, like I said before, you change the rules, you change what the pieces can do. So there's kamikaze and Beirut chess. Or atomic chess, where one of the pieces is equipped with a bomb, and so if you use it, you can take out any piece like within a 3x3 square or something like that. Kung Fu chess. This is a variant of chess without turns, so anybody can move any single one of their pieces at any time. So it eliminates the turn-based factor, and you move very quickly. So that would be Kung Fu chess. Others are based on incomplete information. So there is dark chess. That just sounds cool. That's where a player can only see the squares of the board that are attacked by their pieces. So you don't know exactly what is ahead of you when you go forward and try to move. So I also know some of the variant moves that you can give to characters. Usually they symbolize this on a chessboard by inverting a symbol. So you have, for example, the falcon piece that you could add in. Falcon is different where it moves forward diagonally like a bishop, but it can move backwards like a rook. The hunter piece is the reverse of that. It can move forward like a rook or a castle, but backwards as a bishop. And then finally, there is one here that I am desperate to learn. I've seen it played online. It looks like an absolute brain bender, but I want to try it just to see if I can do it, but I'm worried my head would explode. And that is called five-dimensional chess. Five-dimensional multiverse chess with time travel. Let me see if I can get... Yeah, it's a game. It's available on Steam. 5D chess with multiverse time travel. The first ever chess variant with spatial, temporal, and parallel dimensions. So if you play the game of chess, as you go through the game, you're playing against the computer, it keeps track of all the previous moves. You can scroll back to see previous moves that were made. You can then send a piece backwards in time into the game to change the outcome. And when you do that, it creates a diverging chess timeline. And then it creates these multiple parallel chess games that you can move pieces in between these parallel games in order to win on them. So if you're going ahead in the game, let's say, you realize you could have made a really good move like 8 moves ago. You send your queen back in time to be in that one position to be able to do it. But you have to be careful because your opponent can also send pieces back in time, and that creates parallels and variant games. So for somebody who enjoys time travel, enjoys that in fiction, the Disney Plus series Loki, stuff like that, I am eager to try that one. Maybe I'll give a review of it in a future episode here of Free For All Friday. But I hope that was helpful for you all, and yeah, definitely enjoy your weekend. Maybe you should crack open a game of chess, and even if you're a beginner, just go at it. It's fun to do. But thank you guys so much, and I hope you have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.